capacity recording. So I'll count down from three, and then we both clap. That way, Birdo has a sync point at the beginning of the pod. So, right, start your recording now, so that the clap is recorded.
Gotcha. Okay, I'm recording right now. So we're gonna do like 3, 2, 1, clap.
Yeah, clap on zero, basically.
Okay.
So 3, 2, 1. Yeah, it's just because I live so far away from everyone else that there's always lag.
Oh, well, yeah, because you're in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly. So, all right. Welcome to the No Backboard Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Doyle, and with me today is Holyfield's Drew Steele, and we're going to be talking about two of the teams that have really interesting summers coming up, the Toronto Raptors and the Los Angeles Clippers. And both of these teams are in similar places, so we decided to put them on a podcast together. And we'll start with the Clippers because I think they're the less interesting team, but also if things go badly for them this summer, there's going to be a lot of articles written about what went wrong and when things went wrong there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The way their cap is, who they have on the team, their lack of draft success, and honestly their lack of draft picks. Moving forward, they're in a position where they can't even really rebuild either. It's almost like retooling around Chris Paul is their only really like legitimate option.
It's crazy that a franchise. I mean, you look back to 6 years ago when that Chris Paul trade happened, and the Clippers had been a joke for so much of their franchise history, and that almost feels forgotten because of Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. And now there's this expectation that they're going to be good, but they didn't ever put anything around those guys, really. I mean, DeAndre Jordan is good. It's arguable how great he is. JJ Redick's a solid player. Jamal Crawford, people will argue about 10 years after he retires. But after that, like who has developed on that team in the last 6 years?
No one, and that's the really funny part, because if you go back to the 2013 draft, which is Doc Rivers' first draft, they drafted Reggie Bullock, who's no longer on the team anymore, and they passed up on guys like Andre Roberson, Rudy Gobert, Allen Crabbe, and again, this is, a little hindsight in it, but you just kind of get an idea of who was still available, and then you even look at the undrafted free agents, Ian Clark, who's playing a good role in the Warriors right now, Robert Covington, who's beloved right now over the Sixers, Seth Curry, Matthew Dellavedova, Rodney Magruder, and that's just, these are just solid guys that the Clippers would love to have just as like these core role players. And then you
Yeah,
move it. Sorry, go ahead.
it's not just that they haven't drafted well and that they've traded away a lot of draft picks because they've done both of those things. It's also that there's no D-League fines there.
No.
There's no, where are those guys that you need to find? Because when you look at the model of success in the NBA, you're always talking about the San Antonio Spurs, and you're always talking about how they have a top five record every year and yet still keep finding young guys to fill the bench. And it's the undrafted free agents, it's the D-League fines that they always seem to have cycling through. And the Clippers have done none of that.
No, and that's really sad. And then when you look at a team like the Knicks, since Phil Jackson's been around, they've done that with undrafted guys. They found Langston Galloway in 2014, who's now a legitimate role player in the NBA. And you have Ron Baker, who's beloved now, but almost as a meme, but he's also a good role player. And you can say the same thing about Chason Randle too. Like the Knicks, who are completely dysfunctional, they're one of the biggest laughingstocks in the league. They found role players, and the Clippers have found no one. And it's not like these guys aren't available to the Clippers either, which makes it really, really like kind of sad in that sense.
I guess there is one exception. There's a guy who they've signed in September of 2014, the Clippers, who was an undrafted free agent, who is now a rotation player in the NBA, and that's Joe Ingles. But they waived him before that season started.
No, I know, and it's sad because they could use someone like him. And they just were like, no. And they just don't It looks like Doc, both Coach Doc and GM Doc Rivers, wanted nothing to do with focusing on building that core through undrafted free agency, through the D-League, finding like these gems. Instead, relied on veterans, on minimum players like Mo Spates, like Ray Felton, who are fine, but aren't really getting you past anywhere else. And this is where they are now. They don't have any young players. The only player that they have that they drafted is Bryce Johnson, but that's only in 2016, and that's it.
There's nothing. And so you go into this summer, and you say, like, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin have never really fit together as well as you would have liked them to. So when you look at the Clippers, it's crazy because this core seemed so good 6 years ago when they when they made the trade for Chris Paul. They had Blake Griffin, who was the rookie of the year. DeAndre Jordan was an up-and-coming player who seemed like the perfect fit with Paul. And it looked like, you know, they had finally built something that could win. And you can go back and forth on, you know, the series they should have won. There's that Oklahoma City series that they definitely should have won. Chris Paul had the worst last couple minutes of any playoff game of his career in that one. That cost them. But at the same time, the roster failures are, they just keep coming back to that.
They do, and it also comes back to the awkward fit Griffin is with Paul and Jordan, because he's not really a catch-and-shoot player. He needs the ball in his hands, and you're already running pick-and-roll with Jordan. So you just kind of have, and Paul dominates the ball. So Griffin isn't really giving you anything else, and you should probably. And now that he's a free agent, I would be pretty upset if I was a Clippers fan and didn't look to move him, either at the trade deadline or even before the trade.
Well, I felt like last summer was the moment to make a Blake Griffin trade. It was coming off the incident where he punched a team staff member. It just felt like he was on his way to being a free agent. You make the move then to see if you can build around Chris Paul before Paul hits free agency to try to sell him that you're trying to build the team to get him to come back, if whether things go well or not. Because now Chris Paul's only, you know, his only measuring stick for whether he stays or not is how he fit with Blake and DeAndre.
Or you make the Carmelo Anthony trade at the trade deadline, especially when the Knicks basically just wanted Austin Rivers. And it's just really frustrating because Carmelo Anthony fits with what Chris Paul wants to do in terms of catch and shoot, off the ball sort of movement. And they didn't pull the trigger because they were worried about guard depth. And that goes back to Doc Rivers not adequately fielding a roster, and he missed out on two potential quality undrafted guys in Ron Baker and Fred VanVleet. And you add those guys in, you don't have to worry about your guard depth because they played quality minutes, especially VanVleet in the playoffs.
Yeah, Fred VanVleet is a guy who, as a Raptors fan, I absolutely love him. He's been stuck as the fourth point guard on our bench most of the season, but he's given the team good minutes. And I sit there and I wonder, like, there are a lot of teams in this league who needed guard depth. How did the Raptors end up picking him up as a D-League guy?
Yeah, that's kind of the issue with even going back to the Carmelo trade. It's they didn't want to sacrifice guard depth because Chris Paul was injured at that time. But you still got to make that trade, though, because it's Carmelo Anthony who fits perfectly with Chris Paul. Just looking at Carmelo's catch-and-shoot numbers, he was 16th of all starters, averaging 5.3 catch-and-shoot, and he was 9th in effective field goal percentage with 58.6 of the top 20 players who shot, like, volume shots. And that's who you need to pair with Chris Paul when you're running a pick-and-roll with DeAndre Jordan, not Blake Griffin. Give him Carmelo Anthony, who makes those shots more times than not.
If that trade was in play, I have no idea why the Clippers didn't make it. There's so much unclearness around everything with the Knicks right now, because you have to look at, was Melo actually willing to waive his no trade? you know, what was the price? And it,
yeah,
it
no,
feels like
no.
there's as much misinformation as actual information. But if there was an opportunity, I absolutely agree Doc should have gone for it. But coming back to this summer for the Clippers, then you look at it and you go, okay, well, if you bring back Blake and Chris Paul, you're probably looking at maxes for both of them. And now you're looking at, you know, 4 years down the line, you're paying a 36-year-old Chris Paul something like 40 to 45 million that season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably never going to get better than what they were the last two or three seasons anyways. That doesn't seem very palatable, but at the same time, like, they don't have their first-round pick this year. They don't have their 2019 first. They don't have a second-round pick until 2019. I mean, I would actually rather be the New Jersey Nets than the Los Angeles Clippers right now.
Well, I think the Clippers would rather be the Clippers since the New Jersey Nets don't exist. You're talking Brooklyn, but it's okay. But yeah, no, they're not in a good position, especially with their track history of the draft and developing young players. They don't have it, and they don't have the picks to even with that opportunity, and they haven't shown that they can. And they don't really have options, because even if you just retain Chris Paul's bird rights and renounce everyone, you're going to let JJ walk, you're going to let Blake walk. They only have about $3 million in cap space if they just retain Chris Paul's rights. So they don't even have much flexibility that way either. So it's crazy because you can't sign a free agent to replace Blake Griffin because they don't have the cap space. So then you basically become, do you blow it up? They have the cap space to blow it up if they just let everyone walk, but they don't have any draft picks. Unless you're thinking about trading DeAndre, and then, but that's a whole other can of worms that doesn't really make sense for them, especially what they've built up since they got.
And especially since, as much as Blake doesn't fit with Paul, DeAndre does.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Blake doesn't fit, so there really isn't much thing. So you can, like, resign Chris Paul and resign, bring back Bonamute and revisit the Carmelo trade now. Like, other than that, they're bound to this team.
I wish I had some optimism for Clippers fans here, because there's just, I love Chris Paul, I like Blake Griffin, I like JJ Redick. You know, there's a lot of likable guys on this team, and Paul Pierce is now retired, so I can't even hate them for that anymore. But what do you do, and why is Doc Rivers still running this team?
That's the best part. I think we've had this conversation before, and I'm basically taking this line for you. It's GM Doc Rivers did an awful job fielding a team for Coach Doc Rivers, and Coach Doc Rivers did an awful job of coaching the players GM Doc Rivers gave him. Like, it's, you can kind of see this, the coach president of basketball operations, like, combo really doesn't, appears it's not working well in the league, kind of just seeing how Doc Rivers and the Clippers don't, there isn't too much optimism there. Detroit, there isn't, you know, tons of optimism there. I'm trying to think of other teams, but
I mean, the Timberwolves, like, didn't have the year that people thought they were going to.
Yeah, but Tibbs didn't build that team, though. So that's, it's going to be interesting to see what he does, especially since there was a pretty good chance that he was going to trade Ricky Rubio for Derrick Rose before the Timberwolves eventually backed out of that trade. So that's pretty questionable.
I know I have different views on Derrick Rose than a lot of people, but I can't imagine what they were thinking, even considering that deal.
Yeah, no, that's the issue. Like Flip Saunders, you know, rest in peace for him. Like, he built that team, and we're seeing now if Tibbs can, like, nurture this team and basically not, like, ruin, like the young players there, and seeing what he does. So we'll find out. But I don't think the GM coach combo is, like, a good model. Like, you need like a president who oversees everything. You need a general manager who manages the day to day, and then you have a coach who kind of executes and their plan and can coexist with one another and explain it well to the players, who then do everything on the court. Like, that sort of kind of teamwork but like kind of like how the Spurs and the Warriors kind of have like this vision, even though they may have different ways of achieving it, but there's a cohesiveness between all the different teams within the larger organization, and the Clippers don't really have that.
So if we're trying to find optimism here, well, you're the Clippers, you bring back Blake, you bring back Chris Paul, you say we're going to make another run at it, maybe we get lucky down the stretch, maybe, you know, chemistry blows up in Golden State and our window opens up. Who do you look at with your mid-level exception and, you know, as some cheaper contracts to bring in to try to flesh that roster out this summer?
I don't think there really is anyone who's going to push them over the top, even with injuries. Like, we saw Golden State without Kevin Durant for a considerable amount of time, and they were perfectly fine. So, like, you're looking for, like, multiple injuries. You're looking for, like, almost everything to go right. And even then, like, you need to bring in someone more than, I would say, the mid-level exception. I know it's going to be I think it's going to be $8 million this year for the mid-level, but I still don't see how that's going to work, because I don't see Chris Paul and Blake Griffin really working, because I think you should probably surround Paul with three shooters around a very basic high screen and roll and off the ball movement from there. Like, I don't see how Blake works unless you want to try to, like, again, I'm going to keep bringing it back, unless you want to revisit the Carmelo, if it's just, you know, Jamal Crawford and Austin Rivers, and try to bring in like that fourth guy who could probably help you get over. Because other than that, I don't see like a small forward like really making things
better. Yeah, I'm just trying to find sort of a game plan for the Clippers, because you don't have a lot of flexibility. So if you bring everybody back, you have to sort of try to do something with that mid-level, something with those other roster spots. And I'm looking at guys like, I don't know if Tabo Cephalosha will be available for the mid-level, Tony Snell, but even those guys might be out of their price range. And then after that, I mean, you really don't want to run back Jeff Green after they've done that before.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Jeff Green shouldn't be on any NBA roster. There's the hot take of the podcast. He should be out of the league, but that's a different discussion.
How do you feel about Omri Caspi? Because he might be in their price range.
I mean, he's not Kevin Durant. Like, that's, I kind of look at Golden State and you're just like, who can they add?
I understand the problem. I'm just sort of trying to put together a workable plan here. And I know there isn't a great one. And that's what it's always going to come back to with the Clippers, is there's not enough pieces to build. And there's...
No, not at all.
So, in some ways, I honestly wouldn't even mind if either Chris Paul or Blake decides to walk, let the other one go, accept a couple bad years, and restart the process. And that's an ugly thing to say to a fan base, especially a tortured fan base like the Clippers have. But that might actually be their best case scenario.
Yeah, they kind of need to wait it out until they get their first-round draft picks and then go from there. I mean, they're better off being competitive for the next 3 years and then looking to move, looking to, I don't want to say tank, but like looking to like bottom out a bit, get like two good draft picks and try to.
But I don't think Chris Paul stays with the Clippers for less than a five-year deal, and I'm not sure how tradable a 35-year-old max Chris Paul is going to be. So with him, it's either you keep the five or you're not keeping him at all.
Or you can bring back, you know, run it back and think about getting a new coach. Or maybe not a new coach, but a new general manager and president of basketball operations for some sort of shakeup that alleviates Doc from one responsibility.
That should be part of the plan for the Clippers either way. But at this point, I think we're just kind of kicking the tires on things we've already said. So we should move on to the Toronto Raptors. And cards on the table here. I'm a Raptors fan. I have been since they became a basketball team. And I legitimately love this core. And I have mixed feelings about DeMar DeRozan, as people know. And there has been a sentiment out there that I'm a DeMar hater. I don't consider myself that. I just think he has visible weaknesses that need to be acknowledged. But at the same time, you know, just like with the Clippers, there's big questions this year. They got swept by Cleveland, and they spent their season trying to build to match up with Cleveland. That's what the Serge Ibaka trade was about. That's what the PJ Tucker trade was about. That's why they brought in Damari Carroll 2 years ago. And it's, they weren't close. So, I mean, we'll get into this as we keep going, but sort of, with Toronto, you have to talk about, can they ever match up and be a contender built around Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan?
The answer is probably not, but unlike the Clippers, they're actually in a position to, like, you know, do things, move around. Like, unlike the Clippers, they have, like, young players that they may not be superstars, they may not be all-stars, but some of them can become starters or just good role players for our core, because you have Norman Powell, you have Van Fleet, you have Dellen Wright. Like, you have some of these guys, and then you have someone like Damari Carroll, whose contract can be moved at the price of, like, a first-round pick potentially this season. Like, you can move him. And even DeMar DeRozan can be moved, too. So it's not like they're in a much better position moving forward, unlike the Clippers, to either completely gut it or even refigure. Because they have pieces that can compete with some luck, I would say, more than the Clippers, because of the conference they're in.
For the Clippers, it's either bring it back or accept some awful years before you even start your rebuild. For the Raptors, it's basically bring back the core or jump right into a rebuild because of those pieces like Powell, like Jakob Poeltl, DeLon Wright. And I'm still not even completely out on Bruno Caboclo, and I know I'm in the minority there.
You definitely are in the minority.
I mean, for a guy, when you watched him in the D-League a year ago versus this season, he has come a long way, and I don't think he's ever going to be a star. You know, the Brazilian Kevin Durant thing was always a massive reach. But could he be a bench guy for an NBA team? I'm starting to believe it could happen.
I mean, if the Raptors can find a way to get 15 minutes out of him, like productive basketball, then that's, I mean, better than nothing, because you're probably the only person watching D-League's Raptor basketball to just watch Bruno. I mean, I'm certainly not. I don't think I've ever seen him play an NBA minute. And I've watched the Raptors a few times this year, too. So it's not like I've never seen him play.
He played 40 minutes this season.
Yeah, I mean, that's less than an NBA game. I mean, like I said, if the Raptors can magically turn Bruno into, like, the third guy, like the third small forward off the bench coming in for, like, 10, 15 minutes, and he's not a disaster, I mean, that's better than what it was. Because what was it? He was 2 years away from being 2 years away. That was the Franchella line.
That was 3 years ago. So
He may come, like, out of nowhere on year four. Like, we're still waiting, but yeah, I would, you know, hold off on Bruno becoming anywhere near.
Hey, he was a starter for the D-League champions.
I mean, Maurice Endor for the Knicks was a very productive D-League player as well, and he was a disaster in the NBA when he played, except for that one game-winning shot, but
yeah.
But
even without Bruno, I mean, there are some nice pieces there in Toronto. So you can go the rebuilding route. Let's start with the bring it back route. And if you bring it back, there have to be some changes because it absolutely didn't work. So Masai Ujiri has firmly set his sights. He's said the goal in Toronto is a championship. If that's the goal, then you have to make some changes. And I mean, the easy target is Damari Carroll, who just hasn't worked on this contract. But to move him, you have to send an asset with him, whether that's one of the young guys. There's seven guys on rookie contracts on the roster, so maybe one of them or a draft pick. If you can move him to clear some salary, that's great, because bringing back, you know, Lowry and Ibaka and maybe PJ Tucker or Patrick Patterson, that's going to be expensive.
Oh, it's absolutely going to be expensive, but you can absolutely move Carroll and, you know, this year's first to Brooklyn. You know, they have the cap space. They can do it. And even in, you know, when July comes around and teams are, you know, renouncing rights and they get the cap space, like, there's teams that can do it. So I think Carroll can be moved even just at a first round pick. I think the issue is going to be what you do with Valanciunas. Like, that's the big question, because I don't know what team needs a center like Jonas at his price and what it would take to move him.
Jonas is really controversial within the Raptors fan base, because there's a certain section of fans that absolutely believes that he's gotten a raw deal, that he's never gotten the touches that his talent demands, and he's, you know, Casey has kept him out of fourth quarters. Between the system and the ball handlers, they feel like he's been held down during his time with the Raptors, and I don't think they're completely wrong. But at the same time, you know, he's a lead-footed center who is a defensive liability, and I don't know that his offensive talent is enough to make up for that, especially on a team where, let's face it, with the guards that are there, he's never going to get those touches.
Yeah, he's not going to get those touches, but he's also, like, pretty good, like, offensively, like, around the rim, rolling to the basket. Like, Jonas is a good offensive player, and he doesn't get the touches he probably, you know, warrants, because he can play. You're right. The question is, does his in-space, you know, pick-and-roll defense, you know, make up for his offense? And even at the rim, like, he's not, like, a huge liability like Jokic is in terms of, like, big men, like, defending the rim and defending in space. But he's also not elite in any sort of way either. He's not, like, Gobert. He's not Draymond Green. He's not Kristaps Porzingis. So that's where it comes in, where it's really tricky, because what team really needs that player, especially starting? Because he can maybe come off the bench and improve defensively like Greg Monroe did with the Bucks, but is Monroe an outlier? Like, that's the main question. Like, if you can get Jonas to just be competent and not be, like, god-awful defending in space, he's very valuable, especially at his contract. But if he can't play defense, like, you can't play him sometimes.
This is where having Masai as the GM really comes in handy, because I kind of believe he's a magician and he can trade anybody. But, you know, there was a lot of stories around the draft that the Spurs really had their eye on Valanciunas, and with their current crop of big men and the problems that they have, I kind of wonder if maybe Pop wouldn't be interested in him again. He might not be a terrible fit there, and Pop's done some incredible things with some slow centers before. So maybe that can be a fit for him. But I think the point here is they have to move on from him, because, number one, Ibaka is a center at this point.
Absolutely.
And Ibaka needs to not be playing power forward if he's coming back. So you can't bring back Ibaka to play him at the four beside Jonas.
Absolutely. And then you should probably think about playing more, bringing back Patrick Patterson and giving him, you know, more minutes at the four, because, you know, he can hit the three. He's that kind of like glue guy you want at the four.
Exactly. So then if you have Patterson and Ibaka filling, say, 60 to 70 minutes a night at the big positions, Jakob Poeltl's ready for more minutes. Bebe Nguera started a bunch of games, and he could play some minutes. Pascal Siakam started 30-some games, and he's looked better and better. So you have enough big man depth there that if you can find a taker for Valanciunas, and even if you can just find somebody to just take him, dump the salary, you make that move. And then, to me, the next guy that you move if you have to clear more salary space is Corey Joseph. And I know he's the Canadian kid, and he's been solid for the Raptors, very good during some stretches, including when Lowry was hurt this year. But with DeLon Wright under contract, with Fred VanVleet under contract, you can cover those backup point guard minutes.
Oh, absolutely. And Corey Joseph would be, given his contract, he's not that expensive, he's relatively young, someone would take Corey Joseph. Like, that, like, he's someone who's movable, and Carroll is someone who's movable. It's just, the question becomes, is Valanciunas movable? And just who is willing to take him, especially when there's just a lot of big men in this league. it's a very difficult question to just, I can't even think of who is willing to do it. Like, I'm just looking at the NBA teams right now and I just can't figure out who is even going to roll the dice. Like, not even the Spurs, I would be like, that's a reach.
Jonas's contract really isn't that bad, I don't think. Like, it's cheaper than Cantor's contract, who's probably his closest comparable in the league. And he's locked in for another two seasons with a player option for a season after that. It's 15 next year, 16 the year after that. So it's not the worst contract in the league. And you're going to see big men that are similar to him get way bigger contracts this summer.
Potentially, but it may not be as bad relative to, you know, Joakim Noah or Dwight Howard, Tristan Thompson. Like, it may not be like large like that, but then you got to ask yourself, would you rather have Jonas Valanciunas for a few more years or have Kyle O'Quinn for, you know, another year and, you know, resign him because he has a player option? Or would you rather have Nogueira or Nurkic? Or, like, I can just list, like, a lot of these undervalued guys. Even, like, Willie Hernan Gomez, who's basically the same as Jonas Valanciunas. So, like, it may not be bad, but you can definitely find a big man for a lesser contract. And I think that's what the issue is. It's not that it's bad. It's just kind of, there's so many big men who can do what Valanciunas does. It may not be 100%. It may be closer to 60 or 70%, but at a much lesser rate.
Yeah, there's a question here about the center position and just this this type of player that doesn't really have a place in the league anymore. The back-to-the-back center who can't defend in space and can't create space either. Because the one thing we keep finding out more and more is there is no diminishing returns on shooters. You can put five shooters on the floor and they all have value. But every guy who's not a shooter takes something off the floor on offense, and every guy who can't guard a shooter takes something off the floor on defense.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the issue, is maybe not necessarily the offense. I know a lot of people want, like, the shooters, they want the three-point shooting, but if you're efficient in the restricted area and you're efficient in the paint, like, there's value there. Like, even the analytics are going to back that up. It's just, it's the defense. It's not being able to close out on a three-point shooter. It's not being able to properly corral a pick and roll. Like, that's where the issue is. Like, if Valanciunas is just getting easy buckets on post-ups in the rim, no one can stop him. Like, there's some good value in there, especially because he can also run a pick and roll. He can't defend. And it's the big men who can't defend is probably much more of an issue than just the big man who can't space the floor offensively, because you have someone like DeAndre Jordan who is an elite offensive player because of all the space he does, and he doesn't shoot probably, what, outside of 15 feet? Like, he just sucks in so much because he's so good around the rim. Like, that's the sort of, like, if you can do that, it's just, but he can also, you know, he's good at defending the rim and he can defend in space.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a huge thing, is your big man has to be able to defend the pick and roll, because that's so much of modern offenses. And with the point guard explosion we're having, I don't expect pick and rolls are going to be getting less, because that is the most talented position in the league right now.
Yeah, no, pick and rolls, it's always going to be here to stay. And even if you have the Warriors who don't run a traditional pick and roll offense, they're still screening a lot, so you need elite guard play even coming off screen. So either way, like, a offense founded either in pick and roll or screens is going to be a thing. And if you can't defend those screens, either coming off it on a pick and pop or anything along those lines, like, you're not going to be playing much in this league. You got to be able to defend that in space, and I don't think Valanciunas can do that, and that's why I don't think there isn't a market for him.
All you have to do is watch the clips from the Cavs-Raptors series where the Raptors got swept, and watch how many times Kyrie Irving would run off a Tristan Thompson screen to get Jonas Valanciunas in space, and Valanciunas would just back off and Kyrie would have a completely wide open mid-range jumper every single time. And there's just, you can't have that. You can't give a guy like Kyrie that much space every time he runs off a single screen.
Exactly. Even in mid-range, I know everyone doesn't, you know, the metrics are saying, you know, stay away from the mid-range, stay away from the mid-range. But if you're making them efficiently, like the Spurs do, and you're not taking, like, you know, you're not relying so much on mid-range, like, there's a lot of value there. And if you're going to give someone like Kyrie Irving all that space, that's just bad defense. Even if you want them to take the mid-range, you just can't give open shots. Like, that's the problem.
So let's redirect to the other path that the Raptors have, because they have that other option available to them, which is going down the rebuild route. They could, you know, Kyle Lowry might not even want to come back. Serge Ibaka might not even want to come back. And if either of those guys doesn't come back, there isn't much sense in running it back in Toronto. And so if that happens, I think we would both agree that you let PJ Tucker go. You let Patrick Patterson go in that case. And then you look at, maybe you still trade Jonas Valanciunas, open up minutes for Nogueira and Poeltl at center. But I think the other one that has to happen if you're going the rebuild route is you have to trade DeMar DeRozan.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you're going the rebuild route, like, the Raptors will have the cap space if they just let, like, their free agents go. So that, like, they'll create themselves really good financial flexibility, even if they want to sign a couple guys this offseason. Then you gotta say, do you want to keep DeRozan? And for as good as a player he is offensively, he's quite flawed defensively. And he's the type of player you're going to need to build a specific team around. And I don't think the Raptors' young players complement DeRozan in that sense defensively. So you got to look to move him. Then you got to ask, who wants him?
Well, I think as talented as he is, he's a complicated player to trade because his game is so specific. Like, he's a ball-dominant player who doesn't create space off the ball. So you need an offense where, you know, him having the ball in his hands isn't taking that away from a better player. Like, you can't put him beside LeBron James because you'd rather have the ball in LeBron's hands every possession, and he's not good off the ball, so he doesn't bring a lot to the table. And that rules a bunch of teams out. But then also, you know, you can't put him beside another guy who doesn't have a three-point game, because then you don't have enough space. So that rules a few teams out. And that leaves you with a pretty small number of teams where he actually fits.
That's true, and I've joked about with you on Twitter with Knicks fans and everything, and I've joked around for the big, like, you know, hot take off-season move is trade him to the Knicks if the Knicks find a way to trade Carmelo Anthony. Because they're committed to running the triangle. And I feel like DeRozan in a system where he can play the Kobe role, because he's basically like a, you know, a poor man's Kobe Bryant in a sense offensively. Like, don't want to compare him to Kobe because Kobe's, you know, one of the best ever. But their games are very similar. So if you put him in the two guard spots in the triangle, where you have someone like Courtney Lee who can help defend the best perimeter player, you have Porzingis who's going to stretch the floor. And you have Noah, who moves the ball very well and sets good screens. And you put him in a system where he can isolate. He can then, you know, do other things as well because the offense forced him to it. It may just be crazy enough to work, even though I think the Knicks should completely rebuild. But I think the Raptors should call them and be like, the eighth pick for DeRozan and form, you know, a trade like that and get something along those lines.
After what happened with Bargnani, if the Knicks see Messiah's calling them, they don't just hang up the phone on principle?
I mean, Dolan will probably throw out every single phone at MSG if Messiah's calling, because he pretty much ruined the Knicks with that Bargnani trade, which is, you know, he's like the Voldemort of Knicks fandom. But it's something that I think both teams could potentially look into, especially if the Knicks don't want to rebuild. Like, if they don't want to go the route that I think they should and they want to stay competitive, they want someone to replace Carmelo Anthony because they want him gone, you know, the younger player where they don't have to max out someone at this new max. I feel like DeRozan fits that well perfectly because he'll be in a structured offense this time unlike the Raptors, where they weren't structured. It was one-on-one, let Lowry and DeRozan do whatever they want.
Yeah, and Masai seems to have recently kind of doubled down on Dwayne Casey. It looks like Dwayne Casey's going to be remaining with the Raptors. I have such mixed feelings about him as a coach, because on one hand, he definitely has some X's and O's issues that are real. The offense has been painful at points, especially in the playoffs. You know, there's been defensive struggles for a guy who came in as a defensive coach. But at the same time, he's developed players really well. He's been the coach for the best period in franchise history, so it's hard to knock him too much. I would rather have seen them go in a different direction, but if he's still there, I definitely don't want to see Lowry and DeRozan back, because that sort of just... You can't keep trying the same thing over and over and expect a different result. That's insane.
Oh, absolutely. Like, they need to mix up something. And whether it's bringing back some core guys, but also getting rid of someone like Valanciunas and Carroll and kind of cutting their losses there, or it's just completely blowing it up, because it doesn't appear like LeBron and Kyrie and, you know, Kevin Love are going to be slowing down anytime soon. So then you got to ask yourself, if you want to win a championship, you got to do something different instead of just kind of being, you know, the second or third best team in the East, make the second round a few times, maybe make the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. But if your goal is to win a, you know, a championship, then you got to do some other things differently.
Well, it's not like you could even just wait for LeBron to get old, because Giannis is coming, and that young team in Philly with Embiid and Simmons.
I mean, I'm a little iffy on them, since they, you know, they haven't shown that they can actually be on the court together and for an extended period of time. Don't get me wrong, I love Embiid, but he barely played a third of the season, and I haven't seen Simmons play an NBA game. And I don't even think I've seen him play a college game, because he played in LSU, and who cares about LSU basketball?
Well, you're preaching to the choir somewhat there, but what I'm saying is, like, there is no guarantee longer term.
No, yes, you know, that I agree.
After LeBron gets old, there's going to be a next guy, and there's going to be a next guy. And you can't, your plan can't be, we're going to wait it out. So, for the Raptors, if you find a take, because with DeRozan, my issue isn't even necessarily that he doesn't fit. It's that if you rebuild, you have to find out what you have in the younger guys. And DeMar is a player who eats a lot of offensive possession. So as long as he's on the team, he's going to be eating 35% usage, 35 minutes a game or so. And that limits how much you can find out what you have in somebody like Norman Powell. Because if you want to find out what Norman Powell can be as a player, you put the ball in his hands a lot. You let him be a disaster, be great, whatever he's going to be, let him be that guy.
Yeah, that's what they're, if they have to go, if they're going the rebuilding route, that's the way they have to do it. There's really no other way to, like, you have to let the young guys get minutes, get them the ball, and let them, you know, run the offense. Because if you're just going to put DeRozan out there with the young guys, his usage rate is probably just going to spike right up, especially how the offense is with the Raptors. So,
Not to pick on your Knicks, but that's kind of what I hated about the Derrick Rose trade was, you know, with Rose there and with Melo there, there was no chance Porzingis was going to get the usage where you could let him be the unicorn that he is.
Yeah, I feel like that's a whole different pod with the Knicks, and I can go on and on with them because I've been covering them for about a year now, just watching and analyzing everything. But no, that's what it is. Like, you wanted, for the Knicks, that's why they wanted to run the triangle, right? Was to get the ball movement, to get everyone involved, to get everyone, you know, quality shots. And it just, they didn't run it for much of the season. And it was, you know, Carmelo mid-range, Derrick Rose driving to the rim, and Porzingis just kind of standing there. Like, I could probably just, you know, just line clips of just Derrick Rose not passing. And he did fine getting to the rim. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, Derrick Rose was solid in that sense, but he didn't pass, and no one passed on that team. And that was the whole point. That's the whole point of having Hornacek running, you know, a triangle flex sort of hybrid offense, was to pass the ball, and no one passed.
Yeah, I think you have to do that. You have to, if you're going to rebuild, you embrace the rebuild. You let your kids be what they're going to be. And then you know this player can't run an offense. This player can't be a number one guy. Okay, well, let's find another one. Be a mess or be great, but don't be in between. And that's my fear with the Raptors, is that they'll end up in a situation where Lowry decides to walk for whatever reason, or Ibaka decides to walk, and they just say, well, let's try anyways, because they're... the middle path doesn't bring you anything.
No, it really doesn't. And you have to hit on, like, the outlier draft pick at, like, 20 in order to, like, rebuild, kind of like how the Spurs lucked into, like, the Kawhi Leonard trade. Like, you kind of, and, you know, the, and not Paul George, like, Jimmy Butler with the Bulls, but they're kind of whole thing. Like, you kind of have to find that player, and they're really hard to find if you're going the middle route. And it's not even like competitive middle route, because if you're gonna have Lowry and Ibaka walking, they're gonna be like maybe a mid 40s team, right? Like they're not gonna be like a legitimate contender.
Yeah, you're talking like a 6th, 7th seed. You make the playoffs, but then you're relying on Masai to just keep batting 1,000 on the draft. And his draft record has been amazing with the Raptors. But at some point, if you keep picking with those bad picks, you're going to miss. Everybody does.
Oh, yeah, there's going to be missing, but you also don't have, like, the high-ceiling guys at those picks either. Like, he's done really well finding those core role players. Like, he still has probably yet to find, like, the diamond in the rough who can, like, oh, this guy could be a franchise starter. Right? Like, that's kind of the issue with that
pick. If you ask a lot of casual Raptors fans, they'd say that guy is Norman Powell. I'm not quite that high on him. I think his ceiling is like starter on a good team, third or fourth option would be an absolute great ceiling for him. I think a more likely outcome is sixth man. But
well, there's nothing wrong with that. Like especially where he was drafted, like that's a good thing.
Exactly. He's a fine player. He's not a great player. And that's sort of what the Raptors have to do, is they have to, if they're going to rebuild, they have to find that next great player. And I kind of wanted to go into towards the end of this pod talking about the more philosophical debate of what is the value of being a good team that's not a true contender? Because that's what the Clippers have been, and that's what the Raptors have been these last couple of years. And everybody talks about, you know, I want to cheer for a contender. I want to cheer for the Warriors. I want to cheer for the Cavaliers, a team that I can say, we have a legitimate shot at winning a championship. And if you're a Clippers fan or a Raptors fan, if you talked yourself into a championship, you were deluding yourself a little bit. So what's the value of being there as a team? Because I think there is value, and I think it's worth talking
about. So I think there's value as well. Just you kind of have to keep in mind that you're probably not going to win a championship left unless everything goes right. But if you're a well-run organization, you know, you draft well, you focus on player development, you put players in the best position possible when they're on the court with the coaching staff, you treat them well, that pays off eventually, whether it's a free agent signing or eventually getting that one diamond in the rough, whether it's in the second round or late in the first. Like, there's value in it for being good. The problem is you don't want to be like 16th, 17th in the draft, like 40 some odd wins, decent. Like you, like if the Raptors can sustain this success, it'll probably eventually pay off, because like, oh, this is a really well-run organization. For unlike the Clippers, they're much better than they were before, but there isn't that much hope, especially when the environment isn't like fostering things either. Like from the outside looking in, like everything could be fine. But I don't see any sort of growth with like, oh, they've developed this guy or that guy, except for Bayamute. That's probably it.
You kind of touched on this, but franchise reputation matters, and it matters in things like getting meetings with free agents. Because at the beginning of the pod, when we started talking about the Clippers, I kind of mentioned what their reputation was before Chris Paul. And before Chris Paul, the Clippers never would have gotten a meeting with a free agent, Kevin Durant. And they did this past summer. He didn't sign there, but they got in the room. And that's what Chris Paul has brought them. It's not a championship, but it's getting in the room. And the Raptors, you know, no free agents ever took meetings with the Raptors. But then LaMarcus Aldridge did it 2 summers ago. And that, you know, he didn't sign there, but just being in the room has value, and there's a lot of franchises that would love to just be able to get those meetings, just be able to feel like, you know, those free agents are considering it. Because if you're not even being considered, you're never going to sign the guy.
No, of course. And if you get in the room, that means you have a chance, because those big name free agents want to be the missing piece. They don't want to be like, you know, the guy that like, oh, we're going to build all this, we're going to draft these guys, we're going to sign these guys. They want to go in and be the missing piece, kind of like how LaMarcus Aldridge was with San Antonio. So if you sustain success, continue that success like the Clippers have and the Raptors have, sooner than later, someone may just be like, I love the city of Toronto. I can be that missing piece. I'm going to sign here. And you know, in Los Angeles is, you know, Los Angeles. So there's always that as well. So, but you need to sustain it, though. That's the key. And some teams don't, you know, build that core. Whereas the Raptors, on the other hand, they look like they're getting there, even though that they're not, you know, they aren't paying dividends in the playoffs yet, but you're getting there. And it takes a very long time. It took the Spurs, close to 20 years before a big name free agent signed with them. Like, that's kind of how these things are.
Yeah, and the other thing is, this is sometimes hard to see when you're cheering for a good team, when you're cheering for a team that's, you know, good but not great. You're getting swept by Cleveland, or you're never standing a chance to beat the Warriors. But being bad is also no guarantee of anything. If you're good but not great, you don't have a chance at a lottery pick. But you can be bad and still not get good draft picks.
And you can also not draft well. Like the Kings and the Timberwolves before Flip Saunders and the Knicks since James Dolan, but they never had draft picks because Isaiah Thomas traded them all. So, like, there's always that. Like, you can just be bad and no hope for years and years and years. And you got to pick. You got to get that pick, though, first. And that's not guaranteed.
Exactly. Like, every year, 28 teams don't make the finals. 29 teams don't win the championship. And if you have to be one of those 29 teams, isn't it better to win games than not?
I mean, I've been following the Knicks now since probably a good 10 years now. And it's been just me following them has been just a terrible experience. Like, and like even like the diehard Knicks fans and the fans who've been following a lot longer than I have will echo this like sentiment. Like, it would just be great to follow a team kind of like the Raptors. Like, they've been really good. It'd be great to just, you know, follow them and be like, oh, this is great. They're in the playoffs. They win games. Like, it's, but they also don't have like the aesthetically pleasing sort of like basketball game. It's like, you're watching, right? So maybe they weren't the best example because, you know, basketball's still entertainment and I also want to watch an entertaining product.
I'll admit that even as a Raptors fan, there were some games this year that were just painful to watch. Yes. I'm not the biggest fan of DeMar DeRozan's game, and I'm not the biggest fan of watching isolations. And the Knicks and the Raptors have that in common. The Raptors just won more games doing it.
And they also have, you know, better players executing that sort of plan. But maybe not the Raptors, but like, you know, a team like the Spurs. Like, they're very, you know, enjoyable to watch. The Rockets are very exciting to watch, and they may not win, but I'd rather watch that as like, because I'm committing time to a television program and I want to be entertained. So like, winning and entertainment, like, that's a good deal. And I much rather that, just kind of as a fan of basketball and rooting for any team, than just kind of terrible basketball.
Exactly. Like, I'm on board with whichever way Masai Ujiri goes this summer, whether he goes rebuild, whether he runs it back. First of all, I have to say, after so many years of a badly managed Raptors team, what a luxury it is to have Masai Ujiri running the team, to have somebody who I trust completely. And so he rebuilds, I'm good. He brings it back, I'm good. I'm happy either way. But no matter what, I'm going to remember these last 4 years as a great period to be a Raptors fan. And that's something, whether or not they won a championship, whether or not they ever stood a chance of beating Cleveland. So that's something to appreciate. And I hope Clippers fans, regardless of what happens with the end of the Chris Paul era, whether that's this year or 5 years down the line, I hope they can appreciate it for what it was, even if it didn't end the way they wanted.
Oh, absolutely. Clippers with Paul and Griffin has been, you know, I don't want to say fantastic because they didn't win and then they kind of underachieved. But, you know, they were so bad for so long. And just being able to just have competitive basketball like every other night, you know, for 6 months of the year. Like, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it has value, and you should appreciate greatness or even goodness when it shows up, because you never know what comes after it. And I think we're going to have to end here, because I got to, you know, deal with some dogs that have been a little noisy throughout the podcast. And thank you for coming on, Drew. Thank you to everybody listening. And we'll be back throughout the playoffs. We had a little bit of a hiatus there due to some medical issues that I had, but we're going to be back on with regular podcasting every week, going into some draft previews coming up, talking about some awards, and then talking about a bigger off-season preview sort of league-wide and this free agent class. So thank you again, Drew.
Thank you, Anthony.